Broadcasted live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Thank you so much for being with us. This is Point of View. My name is Pimelo Modena. We're going to be together until 10. Lots coming up on the show, but we really have to start here with a story that kicked off yesterday. And my colleague Sizwe and his team this morning were discussing this video that had gone viral. You have obviously seen the video, and there was a lot of commotion around how the police themselves actually conducted themselves. Of course, there was a lot of speculation about the story behind what we saw, that Pastor Mboro's video that went viral. And then there was a subsequent video where he had said that he was at the police station. And then there was a third video, his interaction with community members inside the police station. Police Minister Senzo Mkhunu gave a briefing today about other things, but he also went into this particular story and other things. We asked him for a little bit of his time just outside the Lekgotla meeting, just to see if we can get an update and his reaction to what has happened. Minister Mkhunu, thank you so much for making time for us. Good evening and welcome. Good evening, Minister Mkhunu.
Thank you
very, very much. You spoke very briefly today on the sidelines about your concerns about what we all saw yesterday. You mentioned as a teacher yourself that, you know, you were quite concerned about what we saw happening at the school in Katlehong with Pastor Mboro. Just overall, your thoughts on the kind of behavior that you saw out on that video yesterday.
Well, it's something that was quite unfortunate and unforeseen. And it's something that is extremely not acceptable on the side of that community member and his mate coming to a school armed with a panga, and the other one armed with what appeared to be a rifle, and then threatening people and behaving overall in an unbecoming way, in the sense that it was threatening everybody who was just around them. Now, this is a school with young kids, and they don't have to be subjected to such anxieties and unpredictable behavior of a person armed with a panga. And I'm sure the parents of the children in the school who saw that afterwards, they must have held their teeth and praying that nothing happens to their children. Now, the main concern is the behavior of that person, Pastor Mboro, as they say. Totally unacceptable. Now, let's pass that. The second area of concern is that he takes what appears to be family matters to the school. Mm. He doesn't wait until the school is out and children are out of school and then handle his family matters. He uses the school as a playing ground and armed with a panga. And that is unacceptable. Now, police, the matter got to a police station. Now, police can't, as a starting point, arrest a person unless it's caught red-handed on something. Now, this was in a school. The other episode was in a police station. Mm-hmm. Of course, there were run-ins and out there, although I'm not very clear because I would see small episodes of what happened. But overall, the police were there and they seemed to be content with the situation. There were nobody was attacking anyone, but there was there were threats and there was a throwing of harsh words, people throwing harsh words against each other. Now, once the dust settled, police started doing their work, investigate the matter, get witnesses in terms of procedures, in terms of how they work. And they've arrested four people. And during the day, they arrested an additional person. All in all, I think there are five people that have been arrested. Now, that shows that police are there and they react. And this is not a banana republic. And I think Mboro and his people must know that you can't just do what you want, as you wish, anywhere, anytime. This is a public institution. It's a school. And it will never be allowed. And I'm happy that the matter is now brought into the law, under the law and its procedures. We'll wait for an outcome.
It's a very tough one, Minister, because as you're saying, you know, if the police did not witness anything, it's very difficult for them to act. Except one wonders what would have been ideal, because if the police were aware, as we saw in the second video, that there were tensions, and I mean, what seemed to me like the very individual we're speaking about now, even sticking his tongue to the community that had come to the police to obviously clearly tell the police there's a problem here. And he seemed to be quite happy and, in fact, seemingly protected by the police. And when those incidents occur, one does wonder about the vulnerability, for instance, of the community, and also the anger that escalates, which we saw today in the burning of what seems to be his church. Is there a way in which we could have handled this better?
Well, in situations like that, with the afterthought and with reflections, you would always see gaps, and you would always see, if such a thing happens in future, this is the ideal situation in which it can be handled better anywhere where humans are involved, be it in a hospital, be it a quarrel, and so on. I think they must have they must have looked at the incident and how it was handled, and surely as professionals and as people who are mandated to ensure peace and stability in the communities, they would reflect on the matter and say we could have handled it better. But one thing that we should appreciate is that that didn't seem to be, although there was a very, very threatening and any possibility could have happened, both to Mboro and to anyone else. So in one video, I saw him chasing somebody with a panda. Had that person not run fast enough, you don't know.
Absolutely.
Or had the people who were there turned to him, giving up their safety, and grabbed him. Now, all those, and with this other one holding a big firearm on the other hand while they were at school. But those are things that we sit here and reflect on. All of them are now in custody, and they're going to appear as legal procedures.
You've also raised concerns around the criticism of how the police have been conducting themselves in KZN. We've known that a lot of the they foiled a lot of cash in transit heists and so on, and resulting in the deaths of those who were, well, at least attempting to do the robberies themselves. And you are saying, you know, there's a concern about how people are reacting to the fact that police are killing the criminals. Just more of that, please, of your thoughts. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, the issue is commentators, be they experts or non-experts, the media, and everybody else. We have a right, this is a democratic country, to see something, process it in your head, and make comments of whatever nature. We accept that. But I think in a to go far as to be kind of conclusive and to be heard making statements that accuse police and to also even like in the Tribune, I saw a wording like trigger happy police. Now, I think it's a bit out of context. And I'll say why it is out of context. One, none of the people who are raising these concerns, although they have a right to do so, but they then raise the bar to criticize police and call them trigger happy and so on, without two factors that are very important. The first factor is people in KwaZulu-Natal, particularly those in those affected communities where these criminals are said to have run and became law unto themselves, and then attracting police. Now, we haven't heard their word. We haven't heard their reaction. What are people saying on the ground? Because government, because the ANC, all of us serve the people. Now, it would have been good to hear their side of the story and them saying, now, police are trigger happy. Maybe in a situation where police would have just come and would have shot at random, killing people down the street and so on. So it is out of context in that sense that we are not including people that are affected to get and gauge their feelings about what is happening. That's number one. Mm. Number two, we are saying that out of context in that we are not putting ourselves into the scene, the crime scene, as they call it. We are not. We are in the boardroom and say police are trigger happy and we type it and we sell the newspaper. Without necessarily going to the scene, how did you get here, police? Now, what did you say? Who shot first and how did they shoot? Were they shooting in the air or were they shooting in your direction? All those pertinent questions in on the crime scene, they are very important before you conclude and then say, trigger happy. Before you conclude that, no, I have a concern about police. But when you say so, you are not concerned about criminality directed at these people. Where these people committed crimes. You are totally silent about that. Now, I'm very concerned about that because throughout the country, people are complaining about the high rate of crime and murder and all other kinds. The police are the only people between us and criminals. They protect us, they defend us. Remember, these are human beings. Let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, at some point in Khayelitsha, police got a tip that intelligence information that there's a planned heist on transit, cash on transit. It's going to be done by a group of people around 20. They are armed and they are dangerous. So they follow the information leads them to a particular house. They decide that, look, we rather get there now and arrest these people or engage with these people before they do whatever they are thinking. On approaching the house, they then are met with a flurry of bullets directed to them as police. Directed to them. And then they then defend themselves. Remember that these people are human beings. They are fathers, they are mothers. They are sisters and brothers. They are fathers and mothers. We are not talking about Rolling Stones. They have to defend themselves. And it is important that police defend themselves so that we have them tomorrow to continue doing their work defending the community. Now, when eight of these criminals who shoot at police, they die, and then five are arrested. What do you have remaining behind? It's five AK-47. An AK-47 is an assault rifle, high caliber assault rifle. It's an automatic.
Yeah.
There's an R1 there. There's another rifle. There are two pistols. There are cars that have been stolen. There is everything that is criminal in the area. But what do you say in those circumstances? Would you say those police are take a hit? And in another incident in the Eastern Cape, police got intelligence information, and they then ran after those who were catching cash in transit
Yeah.
And on appearance, they are shot at, and police retaliate.
Yeah.
That's the matter. That's the reality of the matter against lofty ideas, which and I've said. I'm going to take the initiative and have a meeting with those whose names appear as concerned people in KwaZulu-Natal so that we can engage, hear their side of the story, and then I hope they will hear our side of the story.
Minister, you raise another issue I wanted to pick up with you, the issue of these automatic rifles that we are seeing everywhere. I think we briefly touched on that, you and I, not so long ago, but clearly these are somewhere. These are illegal, as far as I know. But even with Pastor Mboro's incident yesterday, it seemed like an automatic rifle. You've just mentioned an incident here as well with this cash in transit, the tip off, and there were automatic rifles there. There's something going on here that we need to scratch the surface a little harder about where these weapons are coming from.
We are on it.
Yes.
We are on it. We are doing a lot of homework. We've done a lot of homework. Remember, police almost arrest people on a daily basis and get from them these illegal firearms. And they continue to do so, and they must continue doing so. But it has come to a point where these illegal firearms, these firearms that are in the hands of people, are really contributing as a factor to murders in the country, which murders are a very at a high rate, and everybody is concerned about the rate of murders. It's from these firearms, most of them illegal, and therefore we are raising our attention to this. We are prioritizing it, but we have learned at the same time that firearms alone, out of context, you won't be able to deal with them in isolation of drugs. Where there are drugs which are in supply in big volumes, unacceptably big and high volumes, even in the streets, even in housing, in houses, even in suburbs and townships, even people like in Kovlestar, who got a farm and they established a factory, and they were exporting and they were distributing inside. So these drugs are all over. So it's drugs, it's firearms, it's murders. And now there are also kidnappings very close to that. Now, they are one ring. They are at one level. And we're on that. And we'll soon announce plans of how to deal with how we intend doing this over and above what is already happening.
We saw the arrest of, I think it's 95 or 96 Libyans in a what seems to be a military-style camp. They're calling it a security camp. You guys will verify as soon as the case is up. And it raises many concerns. Honorable Groenewald asked the question, is this the only one that we know of? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm very concerned about that. At the same time, I've got to add that these people landed in South Africa legally with permits. In other words, with
study permits.
With relevant papers and so on. And they had received them from our embassy in Tunisia.
Mm-hmm.
But what has happened is that when the matter arose, Apple was raised by people as a concern, it needed to be scrutinized. How did they get visas? Where are these visas? And it was found that in the process of processing these visas, surely those who are familiar in home affairs with this, they have established that there were procedural blunders. In terms of compliance, all compliances, hence they've charged these people misrepresenting themselves and saying they are would-be trainees when in fact they were getting visas to train militarily. So that's a concern, that how do we give people visas through our system, and only to find that it shouldn't have been the case. Surely Home Affairs is going to look at that, and we're going to be engaging on that in our cluster. But the second one is that the training ground there, or camp or college, is legitimate in the sense that they applied and they were given permits to do what they're doing, and licenses for the firearms they use there. But what has happened later, when this incident became what it is now, there's a CIRA, which is the private security authority, the regulatory authority.
Yes.
They scrutinize this, and in their opinion, they are saying on the issue of compliance.
Yes.
They are scrutinizing that, and they will make an announcement. And how is this a query? In your house, where you live, it's a residential area, and everybody, when they look at your house, they take it to be your house, your residential area, without knowing how many bedrooms and what's happening in those bedrooms and lounges and so on. Then someday, people find out that, no, it's not a normal house. It's actually a factory for drugs. It's disguised as a house, as a normal residential house. That is when this thing arises, to say, this person occupies a house in a suburb. It's normal. He's paying rates, paying everything. But what's happening in the house is not what is supposed to be happening. That is the similar case in the case of that camp.
And I understand. My last question, Minister, to you is that surely there needs to be more vigorous ways in which CIRA should be monitoring these facilities. Because, yes, of course, I can apply and say, I just want a house to live with my family, and yet I want to produce drugs. There should have been a way in which CIRA can monitor the facilities that they give licenses for.
It's a loud a call to all state security-related apparatus. That not only must they do their work, but they must be seen to be doing their work, and they must be thorough. You could find that in one or two embassies, for instance, outside the country, there could be a level 7 person processing this. Mm. Which means that the whole country of South Africa relies on that official to process the visas. And you would love to see somebody senior, maybe a director, which is a higher level, doing this so that there's capacity to look at all aspects. Now, I'm making an example.
Yes, sure.
So it's a loud call, and we now see where to tighten up between various state agencies, but they themselves, different departments, have identified what they see as loopholes that need to be tightened. And I'm happy about it, but we are going to be meeting to discuss the matter.
Is there suspicion that there are more like these, Minister?
Pardon?
Is there a suspicion that there are more like these that are disguised as training facilities but are doing other things?
People have made calls to say, we know of another one where a similar thing happens. Some of these are perfectly legal, but occasions such as such a private security company getting a tender requiring 100 firearms of a particular caliber, and it runs for 5 years or for 3 years, and they don't get any work after that. But firearms are there. They don't take them back. In some cases, they hire them to somebody. So here is a person with 100 firearms, but not using them for the purpose for which they were applied for, but they are legal. So we have asked CIRA to look at such instances and others, and we have given instructions to police to comb South Africa of any suspicious training that is happening all over, and to talk to people who have been calling us to say there is this, there is that. And so that investigation is underway.
I really appreciate your time, Minister of the Police, Senzo Mkhono.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.